Squarespace is not only the best place to build your website, but to discover new domains too. Something like topfootballcamp.com for your top football camp, whisperingbloom.com for your silent retreat, or whisperingboom.com for your shouting retreat. Maybe velvetchords.com for your music studio, or existentialglitter.com for your artist studio. With a website from Squarespace, you can build your brand and your business all at squarespace.com. Get your domain before they're gone with offer code MAKEITREAL for 10% off your domain or website.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
S 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Tuesday. It's quite an opening song.
Thanks.
What brought you there?
I don't know. I've just been listening to like the Four Tops lately. Nice. Honestly, I've been listening to a lot of Motown. I enjoy it quite a bit.
Love Motown. Underrated phase in music. Doesn't get enough credit. I mean, it gets credit, but
yeah.
It was...
I mean, it's definitely faded out from when I was a kid. I remember when I was a kid, KLOU was like all the way down.
I think we could argue that almost everything pop music now comes from that. The groups of people, you know, I mean, like derivations of what boy bands are. Those guys weren't boy bands. They were men, you know, singing in groups. You know, it wasn't like, you know, teenage boys that were thrown together. These guys actually had talent. The Motown guys. I'm teasing. But yeah, I think maybe that idea started there, where it's like groups of people singing and a lot of movement on stage and a lot of... But what preceding that, what was the way that it worked? It was basically just bands and people standing on stage playing instruments. It wasn't really a big show and a lot of movement and a lot of, you know...
I don't know. I mean...
Of course, before that, it was all big band era.
Big band and like the Lennon Sisters and things like that. And then into like Bill Haley and the Comets. And it's interesting.
Yeah.
That's
a big piece of the evolution of modern music right there.
And I really am curious about, because like when I listen to Phoebe's music, like on a road trip with her or something, I've said this before, as a musician, I get it. Like, I could play it. I see what you're doing, but it just doesn't appeal to me. And you just wonder what is next. I always pictured it, like, when I was a kid, I pictured music today to be like, beep, boop, beep, boop, boop, you know?
Some of it is.
The music of the future.
Yeah. Everyone is just covered in foil.
Yeah.
Eating little globs of... Wheels brought something up right before the show that really brought back memories. He said, remember in school when the teacher would say, it's time to put your head down on the desk?
Yeah.
And Rach had something to say about it, and Wheels had something to say. And all I'm thinking was, I wish I could do that right now.
Yeah.
I wish as an adult we had. Can you imagine?
We just have a break.
Someone comes through and they're like, okay, I want all of you to put your heads on your desk for half an hour. You're like, woo.
I'm going to start doing that when you guys get out of hand. We'll be like, guys, it's time to put our heads on our desks.
Down. It's quiet time.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
I like that.
Movie day was great.
Oh, man.
When they would wheel that thing in.
Yeah.
And they're never good movies. They're always Hemo Magnificent or something like that. Always trying to teach you something.
In freshman year, you had to take one semester of gym and then one semester of like health class. Mm. And our health teacher was the wrestling coach. And I don't know, every couple weeks he would just put on a movie. Like one week we watched The Road Warrior. Huh. And he goes, personal safety. Don't do anything you see in this movie. And then plays the movie.
Did you guys have any sort of sex ed in Catholic school?
Yeah. Yeah. I think started in fifth grade.
Wow. Well, yeah. Like,
you gotta start early.
Yeah. You know what they say?
We sort of did.
Yeah. What do you mean, sort of?
It wasn't comprehensive.
You know. Not what you're looking for?
Yeah. It was like
I think they're leaving some stuff out.
Yeah. Like, it was clear that there was, like, you know,
It was a missing piece.
Yeah, it was like big jumps, you know what I mean? Like, we didn't make any stops along the way.
Gotcha.
It was more of a science angle.
And you could have used it, because you thought sex was throwing up on people.
I was counting on that.
Let's just say fifth grade Catholic school sex ed did not disabuse me of that notion. That's how non-comprehensive it was, is I walked away going, yeah, I guess I can still make sense of it.
Very funny. I just saw, I've lost track. I haven't been to Alaska in 30 years more. But I think today was the day that the sun went down for the last time. And so it's like the 30 days of night. You have 30 days of light. And I remember so well, there's a place in Anchorage called Chilkoot Charlie's. It was a big, like a Dave and Buster's, but for Alaskans. And I remember coming home from that at like 3 a.m, and it looked like what it looks like here at about 6 p.m. Mm. And they had, I want to say they had lead in their drapes just to block it out, to block out the sun.
Man.
Interesting.
And then it was normal. And then the 30 days of dark, I don't remember it getting like that bad in Anchorage. I'm sure farther north it does.
But what about the vampires?
The vampires were bad.
Oh. What was that movie?
30 Days of Night.
Oh, is that what it was called?
I was going to say Twilight.
I didn't know what it was called. Twilight.
David Scruggs, haven't seen David before. Hello, Dave. Says, not trying to start an argument, Kevin, but are you saying that boy bands like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys are not talented?
Well, congratulations. Yes. You started an argument.
No, yep, that's what I'm saying. How many of those folks had staying power?
Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. He's definitely got talent.
Hey, not trying to start an argument here, but I am going to confront the most argumentative person on the planet.
Oh, he's playing around. David's playing around.
I think they're all talented. I have trouble thinking of a musician who has, quote, made it, who I wouldn't think is talented.
Well, they're talented in like different ways, right? Like I think you could argue maybe NSYNC aren't like super talented songwriters because they likely didn't write.
I was gonna say they didn't write any of those.
Wasn't
things.
The assignment? Though.
No, that's they true. Are. You could say they're talented singers and dancers and choreographers. A lot of them have a hand. They don't. They might not be the lead choreographers, but they have a hand in, you know, coming up with their own dances and stuff. So it's a different type of talent.
Well, the position isn't that they don't have talent. The position is they're not near the level of the Motown people. That's a different level to me.
Different things.
Yeah. But like different talent stays. Things. I mean, people still play the four tops literally 60 years later, 70 years later. And I don't know that if we're another 30 years down the road, we're still going back to the Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, I've always found that interesting, the way that my...
Kevin's ready to say bye, bye, bye.
The way that my generation still sees our bands, because they're old as hell, but they're still out there. And my example is always Fall Out Boy, for some reason. Like, will you guys go see Fall Out Boy in 20 years, kind of thing?
Probably not me, because I don't really want to go to that show. I don't know. I like that band, but I don't know if I want to go to their show.
Well, here's the problem.
I don't know if you guys have any bands like that.
Here's the problem. I have tons of them like that. Most of them are like that. But that's just because I don't really like going to concerts. Pre 2008, that's like my favorite band. I like every single song that they made, and I still listen to them all the time. Post 2008. They've been like absolute dog poop and unlistenable.
I wouldn't go see them
just because I haven't liked anything new that they've made in 20 years, and you know.
But like, if the Strokes are touring in 30 years, I'll go see the Strokes.
I'm trying to think of, and we've done this before. But I'm trying to think of a band that has been really consistent over 20 years minimum.
Oh, it's almost impossible.
It really is.
I mean, Foo Fighters were. They've been around for such a long time now that I just don't even listen to the new albums as they come out. I'm just kind of
done. I'm with them. I'm the same as Andrew is on Fall Out Boy. Like, their first two albums are great. Since then, I couldn't care less about any of it. Not to say it's bad. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it's not what it was.
Yeah, it just feels like you just run out of it. Some of your stuff.
Seems like the normal pattern, right? Like the ones that last are the rare ones.
Yeah.
95% seem like, you know, they've got a few albums in them where they're at their highest level. And then after that, it's just trying to hold on.
Well, look at someone like Johnny Cash, who had like so much early success. And then later in his career was working with, I think it was T-Bone. Maybe it was Rick Rubin he was working with. I can't remember. But like put out like that great cover of the Soundgarden song. And I mean, he kind of had a second phase. I don't even know if it's like you have a certain amount of magic and it runs out as much as it's you have your time in the sun and then people are going to move on to the new thing.
It's also hard to like what drives most people when they first get there is the drive to get there, right?
Yeah.
And your creativity is at its peak because it hasn't gotten out there yet. You know, but once you've put out 50, 60 songs or more, you're starting to be, you're a special person if you're still putting out greatness after that. Like, I think that's what separates a lot of the greats.
Born to Run is like one of the greatest albums, hands down, flat out, ever written. Whether you're a Springsteen fan or not, it's flawless. And the reason for that is because it was his absolute last chance to make something good. Mm-hmm. He was like, if this does not work, people had told him, we're not going to give you another chance. We're not going to give you, you know, more shots. You got this one last chance to do something big, or that's it. Meanwhile, down the road, he's one of the most famous people in the world. He's got more money than Jesus, and, you know, it's hard to, when you're not hungry like that, it's hard to, I think, really produce something that can rise to the level of greatness. You know what I mean? I think that it's, a lot of people have said similar things, basically, that it's hard to write when you're perfectly happy. It's hard to come up with, like, you know, really emotionally resonant music when you're, like, sitting in your mansion or out by your pool or out on your boat or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's...
So think about Paul McCartney, who is clearly an all-time great, right? Like, if there's a Hall of Fame of Hall of Famers, he's in that second Hall of Fame, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's he made in the last 40 years that's any good?
Yikes.
Temporary Secretary.
Yeah, there's one.
Greatest song of all time.
See if you can find that.
And that's not even, I'll come in with
that. It's not even
next.
Picking on him. Like, to me, he's one of the all-time great songwriters and
Band
rock
on the
stars.
Run came out in, like, 2022, didn't it? Isn't that when that song came out? So that's pretty recent.
Yeah, that was when I was, like, 4. I mean, Live and Let Die might be the last thing that I would listen to him from him and go, like, that's awesome. And it's not his fault. I think that happens to everybody for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel lucky to be in this creative job, pardon me, because for the past... So people say like, oh man, DGS was so much funnier when it, you know, first started. When it first started, I was insane. I was. I was 36 going on 18. I was like a kid in a candy store. I had access to all this stuff. I had producers and Jim Modulin, and we'd do all these voices and characters and all that kind of stuff. And I had a lot more jet fuel. But I'm lucky in that, unlike most creative jobs, the table's set for me every day when I come in because new stuff happens.
Right.
Because that's what we do. We talk about stuff that happens in the world and stuff we think about and... You guys hopefully like it, and there you go.
Yeah.
So. Possibly the worst song ever written.
I thought this is what you said the future music was going to sound like.
I was right.
And this was, I guess, what over 40 years ago now.
Paul McCartney.
Oh, my God.
This came out in 1980, Temporary Secretary.
Oh, that's what this is.
What was...
How did what, he
what was
make
he
this?
Think, yeah, what was he thinking?
Look, Paul McCartney.
Did he have like a 4-year-old? Just
enormous talent, but he has written some crap songs.
Oh it's my true. God, that song "Freedom" that he wrote.
I mean, they played this. I was unaware of it.
It's like a miniature horse was playing the keyboard.
And I.
Yeah, that's what the horse is playing.
Like, isn't it cute the way he just bangs his snout?
No, he's so fast.
He's playing McCartney. Yeah, they played that at the Paul McCartney concert at Bush. Everyone went to about 10 years ago, and
like, what
Was that a request? Happiness? Were people enjoying it?
It was a lot of confusion.
Like, what's happening?
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of 1980, last night I just was letting the YouTube algorithm do its thing, and I watch a lot of tennis highlights. It was showing me highlights from the 1980 U.S. Open men's singles semifinal between John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors.
Oh, uh-huh. Man.
It was really fun to watch. Yeah. It was,
with their tiny rackets.
Yeah, right.
But I looked down, and it took place on September 6th, 1980. And I was like, that was Dave's 16th birthday.
Oh.
And then I was thinking, like, I wonder what Dave was doing, like, as they
I think
were.
I think I know.
Driving around South Roxana.
Oh, God. My 16th birthday.
Were you a driver's license right away kind of dude?
Oh, everyone was.
Yeah.
Everyone was.
Yep.
I didn't know a single person that didn't get it on their 16th birthday.
Boy, did that change in the last 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I waited a couple months after my birthday, but that was only because I had to take driver's ed. My school didn't offer driver's ed. So I took it during the summer, and you had to wait like 6 months after getting your permit. So I was a few months after turning 16.
Did they offer how to drive a wagon?
Why, because it's Jerseyville?
No, just because of the way you describe it. Like very, very old school.
It was, my school wasn't even big enough to offer driver's ed. They had to outsource it to the public schools.
Speaking of 16-year-olds, I had a sweet moment last night. I was getting gas and not a QT, like at a, I don't even know what the hell it was, Phillips 66 or something. And it was just me and this young girl, I'm guessing she was 16, pulls up and she says, "Excuse me, sir." And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "I have no idea how to make this work." And it was just, you know, the classic pump. And,
yeah.
And she's like, "Which one of these, you know, like
unleaded,
mid, whatever, do I want?" And so I kind of walked her through it, and it was sweet.
That's nice.
Yeah. It's nice that she was comfortable enough to ask.
Yeah.
Instead of just doing it wrong.
It made me feel good that she wasn't like, "I'm not asking that guy."
Have you ever seen the videos of the pranks that teenage girls play on their dads with that?
I was just about to bring that up.
Yeah, they say that they put the diesel gas into the regular car, which will ruin your engine.
Yeah, they'll be like, "Dad,
like, I went to the green pump."
Yeah, she's like,
"Isn't that the better one?"
Yeah, it was more money, so I thought that was the best way.
And the dad's like, "What'd you do?"
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it made me judge, though, like, oh, I shouldn't even say this. Like, why didn't your dad teach you to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, for years before the kids turned 16, oh, my God, when we would visit Grandma in South Roxana without Maureen, which we'd, you know, just wait, chug out sometimes, or just me and Phoebe, or just me and Nick, and I would let them drive on the old country roads. And that came up during our KU visit.
Yeah.
So Marie was like, I thought you took to it pretty quick.
Yeah.
That's the greatest way, man.
Yep.
Out there on the country roads, run off the road, no big
deal. Do the job I need a temporary.
It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with a Y. And if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts.
God, this almost cancels out the Beatles. He's almost just even.
He started off at zero after this song.
You would need like
it blew the fortune
here, there, and everywhere, and yesterday just to make a dent in this one. Like if you brought in those three songs, you'd be like, "We're gonna pass. We're gonna pass." Thank you, Paul. Is it?
Yeah. Good thing those weren't the ones in the 60s.
Yeah. God. I thought this was kind of interesting. We've talked about how, what's that?
We have Colonel Jeff McCausland on the phone.
Oh my gosh, how did I forget that? I thought that was at 2 o'clock. Colonel Jeff McCausland has been a friend of the show for years now, and we've met him several times. He is as cool of a guy as he seems on the air, and he is moving on from this position. And today, as I understand it, Colonel, is your final day doing these hits with CBS. Is that correct?
Well, I'll be around for a couple more days, but today I'm actually in the broadcast center in New York and kind of decided I'd come up here and contact all the affiliates I work with, like KMOX, for one last roundup. So I mean, I will be available tomorrow and Thursday, but that's going to be it, as CBS Radio, as you probably well know, is being disbanded and going away.
Yeah. Well, Colonel, it has been a distinct honor and pleasure to have you on the show. I'm sure we'll talk in the future, but just before we start talking about anything real, like, thank you so much for your contribution to the DGS and KMOX.
Well, it's been, again, a great pleasure working with all the affiliates. KMOX is kind of my home station, I don't know if you realize that, all right? But I was born and raised just north of St. Louis in Illinois. I still have family living in the St. Louis area. Hope they're listening after all those nice things you said about me a minute ago.
They're like, oh, this guy. He doesn't know Jeff. He doesn't know Jeff. That's great. So let's jump into, and Colonel, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give you my opinion and see how close I come. I'm pretty on the record that I'm not a fan of Donald Trump. I really, really try to be as objective as I can, to be as fair as I can. And even if this were my favorite president of all time, I feel like the president is kind of being played by Iran. I feel like they're playing two different games. The president seems to think it's blow up a bunch of stuff and they'll capitulate. And to me, Iran is playing a 47-year long game of, well, you know, we're not going to beat anyone in a conventional war, so we just have to survive. And now for the first time, they've locked up the strait. And I just don't see this ending well for the president. I hope I'm wrong.
Well, I fear you might well be right. I mean, to begin with, this particular conflict, I think, started because the president made some assumptions, frankly, I think urged on by Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel, that a strike on Iran would quickly cause the government to collapse and that, therefore, we would solve this problem of nuclear weapons once and for all, bring on a new government much more amenable to the United States. Well, obviously, that hasn't worked. And though the administration has said, well, we have a new regime, I would say we haven't got a new regime. That's still the Islamic Revolution. We've got a new leadership, and the new leadership is perhaps more conservative, more hardcore than the Grand Ayatollah who was killed to begin with. I think you're also right in terms of where we're at now. I think Vice President Vance and others went to Pakistan to negotiate with the Iranians a few weeks ago, and I think they expected the Iranians to surrender. This was going to be a capitulation.
Yeah.
The Iranians showed up to negotiate, and they brought a team of about 70, including experts. So where we are right now is, I think the Trump administration thinks, well, we're looking for the battleship Missouri. We're looking for the Missouri where the Japanese are going to come on board, and they're going to surrender end this particular conflict. But they're not going to surrender, I think, wholesale. This is a leadership that obviously went through the Iran-Iraq War, thought hundreds of thousands of people get killed in that process. Back in January, before this war began, they killed 7 to 42,000 of their own people, putting down social unrest. I guarantee you one thing, the current leadership in Iran is not worried about midterm elections. And as a consequence, they think their willpower to hold out is longer than Mr. Trump's. And that is the question that we're asking at this particular moment. Do you want to negotiate with them and get them to comply with an agreement? Or if you don't, then you're going to try to take them down. If you're going to take them down, that's going to be a tall order, a land invasion. And you're going to, if you like the war in Iraq, you're going to really like a land war in Iran.
Yeah, my guess, Colonel, is that in the next 2 to 4 weeks, the president just goes, it's over, we're leaving. Europe can worry about the strait, and we have eyes on the enriched uranium. No one's going to go near that. Everything's cool. We sunk their navy. I feel like that's what's going to happen.
Could be. He's only got really three options. Option number, in no particular order, option number one would be to intensify the blockade, try to put on more additional economic pressure, feeling that over time the Iranians will cave. I think that they've got at least a couple of months they can hold out in terms of being able to store oil without shutting down their fields, which could do them serious damage. Number two option would be to intensify the military option, go in for larger scale bombing campaigns, perhaps some kind of a land force to go in either and take down the leadership in total or occupy key pieces of terrain like the Straits of Hormuz or Karg Island, thinking that might provide leverage. And then option number three is exactly what you just said. Declare victory, and he's declared victory at least 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And the Secretary of Defense has said, well, we've accomplished all our military objectives, really, and declare victory and go home, saying that, again, we only get a small portion of our oil out of that region, and leaving it up not only to the Europeans but the Asians. to take care of what's left in the mess. And right now, of course, he's on his way to China as we speak for very important meetings with Xi Jinping, and the Chinese get an enormous amount of their oil and natural gas from the Straits of Hormuz, not only from Iran, but also from the other Gulf states. And they have also got very close economic ties with a number of the countries in that region, so this could definitely potentially hurt the Chinese, and therefore they may have an interest in trying to apply pressure to bring it to a close.
Colonel, it may just be brilliant Chinese hype and propaganda, but it just feels like China is occupying a higher seat at the table than anything I've seen in my lifetime. They're more accepted globally. They're really working it. They're really trying to be there when the United States falls on its face. Do you agree with that?
I think to some degree that's true. And I've seen, you know, polls that suggest people around the world seem more willing now to accept China as a world leader than the United States. This is based on Mr. Trump's actions against a lot of our allies. Don't forget the threat to actually attack and seize Greenland. This comes from the efforts in Venezuela. This comes from the war in Iran. This comes from the tariffs. And so many of our allies, not only in Europe but in Asia, are certainly looking that particular way. And if we are going to move away from our support of our allies, that creates a vacuum for the Chinese to move in on. For example, consider a worry right now that Mr. Trump might say something about we're no longer going to insist on Taiwanese independence. Well, if he was to do that, that would roil across Asia. If you're Korean, Japanese, or otherwise, you would say we have to accommodate the Chinese because we no longer can depend on the Americans.
Man, Colonel, a question for you broader, because what you mentioned about Iran being more difficult than Iraq is certainly driving home a question to me anyway about the balance between the military expertise and the political expertise on the civilian side. Can you talk a bit about that push and pull? Because it's you know, we hear from the political side and the civilian side. We don't often get to hear, unless it's, you know, by permission, the military side of planning out these types of things. And I'm sure that intelligence knows these difficulties more than the politics side. How does that push and pull work, the politics versus the practical?
Well, certainly the president, I think, was listening to Mr. Netanyahu. I think one of the cheerleaders also for this conflict was the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Hegseth, who I would dare say is, without a doubt, the most unqualified person ever to occupy the chair of Secretary of Defense in the history of this nation. But besides that, currently the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Kane, I think is a very experienced military leader. But I've been told that Kane interprets his role differently, perhaps, than others that have been the chairman. He sees his role as laying out options to the president, explaining what the pluses and minuses and risks of each, but trying very hard to not show he actually is promoting one over the other and leaving those decisions to the political leadership, unlike other chairmen I've known of who are much more willing to try to say, this is the best option, sir, or trying to make sure that they didn't allow the president to make a choice that they thought was inappropriate. He seems to want to be an honest broker, and I've heard that in some meetings he's been criticized for being on both sides of an issue because he tries to honestly lay those particular issues out. And I think that may lead us to where we are right now. But the problem we've got is, of course, that, you know, while the Pentagon, Mr. Hegseth, wants to talk about the number of targets we've struck, the number of Navy ships we have sunk, who cares about the Iranian Navy, really? A target list is not a strategy. And so, unfortunately, I think we went into this conflict with a strategy that it was going to be short, be over quickly, and now we're at the point of trying to answer the question that's too infrequently asked in Washington, which is, and then what?
Colonel, I'm sure you knew some of these men and women, but I never, like, when the president took over in his second term, I didn't begrudge him putting his own people in. It's like when a new program director comes in, sometimes they fire the morning show and they bring in their own person. But I know we had to have lost a great deal of military talent as they went through and purged the ranks. Can you just address that?
Yeah, I mean, Mr. Hegseth has fired dozens and dozens of senior military officers, and I think that has a chastening effect on other senior officers in providing advice. This is an administration, at least from Hegseth's perspective, that's not interested in input. He's just interested in execution. Unfortunately, as well, I think a number of the officers that were forced into retirement seem to be coincidentally either minorities, African-American, and or women. And that sends a chilling effect as well to the force. And I think right now, if you're a young woman or a minority, you might say to yourself, you know, the chances for me being promoted to this organization are pretty limited. And so you have the unintended effect of a lot of people then retiring before they actually have to, because they're getting a message from above that they're kind of, you know, their service is not considered to be valuable.
Colonel, thank you again for all the years you've been on the show. And when you come back to St. Louis, I hope you'll reach out, because we'd love to take you to a ball game.
Promise. We'll go see the Cubs play the Cardinals.
There you awesome. Go. Thank you, Colonel.
Take care. Be a belly dancer. I don't need a true romancer.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, DGS and KMOX. Happy Tuesday. Thanks to Andrew, we had some delicious Casey's pizza today.
Oh, that is so good.
Casey's, the most underrated gas station food of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Delish.
And you didn't hear it from me, but I believe they're running a bit of a sale right now.
They are.
Consider asking around.
What type of sale they're running?
Well, this is not an advertisement, so, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, be like everybody go, but it's like 40% off all pizzas right now.
Really?
Yeah. Which is what led me down this path this morning.
Wheels, did you have a piece?
I did.
What'd you think?
Not bad. Yeah, it's not bad. Definitely edible. Like, you know, some places you get pizza.
Wow.
No. Dad, don't get me wrong. Wow. I knew it was going to upset me because I gave him a piece and he was like, I might take a piece. I was like, yeah, that's part of why I brought it, because he said he'd never had it before.
This is the problem is what
I'm
saying.
And then he had no follow-up after he ate it. And I was like,
what am I supposed to do, dance on my chair?
It would be nice.
Shake my ass.
Oh, that pizza. It would be nice if you shook your ass a little. I don't think that's so much to ask for.
Hey, I'll bring in pizza every day if he'll shake his ass.
If you want to throw a little ass around, I wouldn't mind a bit, actually.
This ginger never pay for another lunch in life.
Free food for me. Yeah, that was good. What I was going to say was most gas station pizza is not edible. Mm. Casey's is good.
Well, we could do a little better than edible, don't you think?
I just said it was good.
It's no Mexican chili, but...
I just said it was good.
What do you think there, Rach? Was that a Wheeler thing? Like, did he under-compliment...
No. I think Andrew was just thinking maybe he didn't like it.
No,
because
it's good.
I mean, you know.
You guys, just grading pizza, not just gas station pizza. What would you give it?
1,000.
I really like it.
It's like a B-. It's fine.
We're from the East Side, so we, like...
Yeah. I would give it like a 7.
Yeah,
I'd give it like a 7.5, like a B or a B+.
Casey's is where you go after proms, right?
Okay. So that's okay.
Right.
It's where you stop every morning and you eat it in the parking lot and then you hide it so that no one can see that you did it.
No, I don't think Wheels did anything wrong. I think it's a special pizza to Andrew, so he was hoping that Wheels would be like, oh my goodness, I loved that, but he didn't do anything wrong by not saying that.
No, and also, if you don't like it, there's also nothing wrong with that.
No, it was good.
This is an interesting concept because... Wheeler just came off as sort of a D by
mildly complimenting
by strictly by strictly being accurate. He accurately reported his opinion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but we're such people pleasers who are like, say more. Mm-hmm. Say more.
Next time I'll dance on the chair.
Kevin will twerk.
I don't think I can do that.
Wouldn't be unwelcome.
I don't think I can do that.
Who could and couldn't skip? I was out.
Oh,
that
I can skip.
We could all skip.
Yeah. Okay.
When we tried to skip, yes.
I tried it too.
Yeah.
Did you skip?
Yeah. It came right back. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So,
I was talking to Big Game, and once I started rearing up, I did okay. But I was like,
you're fine.
I was like, ooh. When I'm really on the spot here, I'm not sure. Maybe I don't have it anymore.
I wanted to make a video like who can and can't skip, and then we were all perfectly skippers.
Yeah.
I didn't even post it. I was like, there's nothing
funny
about this.
Yeah. Right.
It's just three adults skipping.
It's like we're all back in sixth grade. We're like, this is easy.
Yeah. You know, it was kind of on my nerves. late night guys.
Did you see? I'm so glad you said this.
Like, did you see them all get together on Colbert?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like, look, I grew up on late night. I graduated from Carson to Letterman, and it was a huge thing for me. But it's no longer a big thing. Right. It's no longer a huge thing.
Well, there's also like 9 of them now.
Yeah.
Well, and it used to be 2.
That too.
I think you're being persecuted. I don't think what the president is doing is right. I don't think what the FCC is doing is right. You have my support. I will give you my protection, but you're really annoying me with this holier-than-thou.
I think if Stephen Colbert's ratings were better, this wouldn't be happening.
Mm,
because, fair. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel is way in way worse favor with the president than Stephen Colbert ever was, and Jimmy Kimmel's on every night. So, I don't know, this whole thing where it's like, we're all going to get together. I didn't watch it. I just saw the pictures. It's like, we're all going to go out on stage together. I'm sorry, aren't you competitors? Why are you there?
Yeah.
What's
also,
going on?
That's always what also, struck me is that was the old school dynamic, right? It was Letterman versus, or, you know, it was never just like, hey, we're buddies and we're going to hang out on screen on competing networks.
Here's something you said also that kind of touches a nerve. You said, like, I believe that you're being, you know, persecuted by the president, all this. We have, like, grandmas getting deported to countries they've never been to. And we've got, like, you know, we're witch hunting trans people. And so the persecution of Stephen Colbert, I don't really care about.
But
there's
real
persecution going on. And Stephen Colbert is like a rich, famous dude. Yeah, I don't really care.
I don't worry about Stephen, but
no,
I do worry
about
the principle.
Because if they're going to shut him down, if you can shut down a famous person with a platform, you can shut down any of us.
And for what it's worth there, if that's what we're talking about, we should all be far more concerned about Barry Weiss and CBS News than we should be about Stephen Colbert and The Late Show.
Okay, I'm wrong. Stephen Colbert actually has really good ratings. However, the announcement that he was going to be canceled gave him a pretty substantial boost. So people have actually been tuning in much more.
Well,
we
also saw,
didn't they,
I don't know how accurate this was, but wasn't there a report that the show loses like $20 million a year?
Yeah, I think that was
a report.
Big,
that even with the ratings, it's just very costly.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
She said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.